Friends, welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is the quick hit for night three of Northerly Island 2017. That's July 16th, 2017, third night of the 2017 tour. I am here with Josh Corin, who is at Josh Corin on Twitter. Hey, Josh, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for joining us to share your thoughts on night three of Northerly Island. I was wondering if we could start just because I know you are a Chicagoan, so I'm sure you've been to Northerly Island in the past. But if you can maybe just give your quick impressions about the venue, and is there anything kind of new and interesting for anybody that might have been there before?
Yeah, absolutely. So Northerly Island is not actually an island. It's about a 90-acre plot of land that the city of Chicago manufactured, actually. Prior to Midway Airport opening, Northerly Island was planned. Northerly Island was actually known as Miggs Field at the time, and Northerly Island was the original site of where the major Chicago International Airport was initially going to be prior to the construction of on the south side of Midway, and then later on the north of Midway Airport down south, and then on the north side where you of course have O'Hare, which is a major international gateway. So. Initially, the plan was to sort of have one major airport that was going to serve international and domestic in the middle of the city, and that's kind of where Northerly Island actually is if you look at a map of the city of Chicago. So it actually juts right out pretty much into Lake Michigan. So logistically, if anybody was there in 2013 and 14 when Fish's prior three-night runs took – well, I guess 2013 was more like a two-and-a-half-night run considering they made it halfway through right. through a show and then – got sort of rained out due to a really Fish has played through some pretty serious weather, but this was absolutely the right call in 2013 was to call the show, and they did, and then they came back and played three sets the next night. But so getting into Northerly Island, it's part of the museum campus here in Chicago. So the Field Museum, the Adler Planetarium, the Shedd Aquarium, as well as Soldier Field and Northerly Island make up so Soldier Field will sound familiar probably for people, so that's where the Chicago Fare Thee Well shows took place. The venue itself is a bit of a walk. There's really no easy way in or easy way out, so you just kind of either have to buck up and find the closest parking space you can and get ready to strap on your shoes and hike in. Whatever you do, take care of those shoes. The other option, as with most Northerly shows, as well as with Soldier Field shows, always the pedicab route that one can go to. But Northerly Islands, once you're in the venue, offers beautiful views. The backdrop is the Chicago skyline. Unfortunately, the first year that Fish played, the backdrop is sort of similar to like the setup at the Gorge, where you used to be able to see immediately behind the stage. You can't see immediately behind the stage anymore, which is kind of a bummer because they sort of put one of those like curtain things or tarps, no pun intended, down the rear of the stage, so you can't see immediately through it, which kind of cuts out a little bit of the view of the skyline, which is sort of was kind of Northerly's best feature. But it's got great sound on the floor. There's plenty of room to move around. There are also some bleacher seating, and relatively new to Northerly Island, which came about in 2013 was the advent of the law of lawn seating at Northerly, which is interesting. It's one of the more unique sort of lawn setups I've ever seen. There's absolutely no grade to it whatsoever. So if you're on the lawn, it's you either going to be right up front or else be prepared to watch a screen for a night. But the sound is quite good, actually, in the lawn. From folks, I've actually never seen a show from Northerly's lawn. I've always been fortunate enough to have a floor ticket. But folks who have found themselves on the lawn have said the sound itself is excellent. But, you know, be prepared that you won't see much of anything in terms of the stage.
Yeah, Mike, who did our quick hit last night, said the same thing, that he kind of went back to the lawn and couldn't really see anything, but that the sound was surprisingly good back here.
Yeah, they've got speaker stacks everywhere. They do a good job with the sound, and the screen is absolutely massive. So, I mean, you can see, and you can see the show for sure, just as far as actually seeing the band themselves and seeing them on stage, seeing these and seeing it, like, again, with not looking at a TV screen or a video screen is, you know, pretty much next to impossible. Northerly runs very few shows a year where the lawn actually is utilized. I'm actually going to Northerly again this Friday for Humphreys McGee, just because they were pretty much giving tickets away on the way out last night. They were like literally $20, so I figured, you know, what the hell for $20 for a night, but for a Friday night's worth of entertainment. But for example, at Northerly on Friday, this coming Friday for Humphreys, there will be no lawn seating. It's not even available.
So. Gotcha. Okay, cool. So, and you were at all three nights, correct?
I was.
Okay. Excellent. Which I know with, two young kids, I believe you have, is pretty amazingly tough, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a logistical, as you know, my friend, being a dad yourself, it is a it's always interesting, you know. But we were able to secure babysitting for all three nights. We had our reliable tag team of our two main babysitters who were able to help us out, which was great. It definitely is a little different. It certainly adds another layer of expense to the to the occasion of seeing Phish, which is always a special occasion. But, you know, it definitely is, you know, you get a little bit of a different impression when you realize that, oh, wow, in addition to the fact that I'm paying for tickets and I'm paying for whatever means of transportation to get there, I'm also paying whatever it's going to cost for when I get home to the babysitter for watching my kids for the evening and basically sitting on my couch last night and watching the Game of Thrones premiere, which I'm sure she was pretty stoked about. So.
Nice. All right. So on to the music. What did you think about last night? Just overall impressions?
Overall impressions, you know, I thought last night we all know the never miss a Sunday show adage. So, you know, even despite my advanced chronological standing and the fact that I did have to get up and go to work at be in the office at 8 o'clock this morning, I definitely made sure that I was going to be at a Sunday show. You know, pretty standard fare as far as the first set was concerned. You know, it seems that followed a pretty regular pattern of Phish sort of using the first set to you know, make sure that they're, you know, the sound is the way they want it. You know, not a lot of experimentation, pretty straightforward, focusing on, you know, playing the songs well, except for Stash, which was kind of train wrecky last night, but that's all right. You know, and then usually once the lights go down and once the sun goes down, I should say, the lights in the venue and Kuroda obviously get significantly better. So the second set definitely came out swinging with the 21 plus minute Carini, which, you know, had all sorts of interesting elements to it, from really dark, evil minor key jamming that you think of traditionally as, you know, good comparison is, you know, a lot of the jamming that you think of associated with Carini from December 30th, 2012, for example, sort of started out the jam for Carini, which was definitely the highlight of the show last night. And then, you know, and as is fairly typical for a lot of the way Phish seems to jam nowadays, they moved into more of the sort of major key uplifting blissful type section as the jam sort of moved towards its latter stages and conclusion, and as many jams do these days, it sort of faded out into the ambience and the next track took over.
Yeah, I thought the it was interesting comparing the Carini from last night to the Simple from the night before, which Simple was a lot more adventurous. They were finding a lot of new territory, kind of pivoting and going into different sounding sections over the course of the 28 minutes or so. Whereas I felt like the Carini last night, it kind of found its spot in that blissed out, like you said, major key groove, and just kind of worked it for a while. And not that it was any less amazing. Well, I would personally probably say that the Simple was better, but just a different type of jam and really good in its
very
own
different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, apples and oranges, and plenty of people have asked me, you know, which did you enjoy more? You know, what did you like better? Simple and Carini happen to be two of my favorite songs in the Phish catalog. So to hear both of them jammed out as they were this weekend was definitely fun. And certainly, you know, the highlight, the two biggest highlights of the weekend for me, but, you know, apples and oranges in terms of like, how the jam was, the jams were structured. I think, you know, Simple certainly had the Simple jam, not to focus too much on Saturday night, because I know we're talking Sunday, but the Simple jam, you know, had many places where it seemed like, you know, ordinarily what I think was really the most different about the jam and Simple was there were a lot of places where, especially in the current era, we probably would have expected to see Trey bail or pull the ripcord or whatever you want to call it, or, you know, go any number of different directions and start up the next song, as he often does when it seems like they get a little bit, you know, nobody's really sure who wants to take the lead here, what's going to happen next, where do we go. That generally leads to like Trey pulling the ripcord in the current era. Whereas, you know, what I liked a lot about the Simple jam is that it, you know, in addition to the fact that it was like, it was right there with Timber, I mean, everybody thought that's what was coming. If you listen right around 13, 14 minutes of that song, you know, it's just a question of when are they going to drop into it. But, you know, they sort of hard passed and went, you know, right back after it for another 15, 20 minutes. So, which was great. You know, and really, really cool to see, and really cool to hear, as well. But, you know, the Carini jam sort of just kind of, once it got started, was just sort of kept, just, you know, the train kept rolling. There was no real sort of time where the jam kind of fizzled out or anything, or you were unsure of like, you know, where are they going to go next? What I thought was really powerful about Carini's jam last night is by the time it came to a natural conclusion, there wasn't, you know, it didn't seem like anything was, you know, pulling the ripcord or anybody was sort of cutting one another off, or, you know, Mike was in a hurry to start the next song, or Paige wanted to play something else. You know, everybody seemed to be pretty okay with, you know, the decision of, okay, you know, now we've taken this as far as we can go, and that's pretty damn far. So, you know, what comes next?
Yeah, that really stood out to me, because I always feel like one of the differentiators when you look at the start of the tour versus the end of the tour, where they're a little bit more comfortable, is that they do, by the end of the tour, hit those spots where it's, they have an exit point, but they keep going. And that's usually when you wind up, they create something completely unique. And that's what you saw in the Simple, and you definitely saw that in the Carini, the way that they pushed through those major jams. So after that, we've got the 20 Years Later, and then we kind of round out with the pretty quick hit Piper, but into a new song, Thread. What did you think of Thread?
There was a lot of new music played this weekend, and, you know, somebody who I enjoy the new tunes. Listen, every song was new once. So, you know, we people moan and groan about new, you know, you can hear, you know, you see people head for the bathroom when a new song starts. Like, listen, you know what? Carini was new once. Ghost was new, right, too. And, you know, the Tweezer was new at one point. Everything was new at one point. So, you know, I never really got the people who like head for the bathroom or head for the beer stand immediately when a new song starts. It's like you don't even know if you like it or not. I thought Thread has potential. It definitely needs some work. I don't know that as it the sort of current iteration of it, as we know, those of us who have followed Phish for a while, songs evolve over time. You know, you think about A Twist in its original beginning and how it begins today, and Ghost in its original beginning and how it starts today. So songs evolve and take shape over time, and Trey screws around with the intro a little bit, decides he wants to change it this way, or they're going to play it in a different time signature, whatever it might be. So I think Thread probably has potential. I think they were sort of unsure of what to do with it last night, and also I the song was a little weird in that spot too. I'm not sure that where they decided to play it was the best choice to debut a song, only because you're sort of right in the, I guess if you want to break the show up into like, you know, first quarter, second quarter, et cetera, you're kind of like right at the end of the third quarter there, just about to start the, you know, the fourth and final quarter, heading down the home stretch. And, you know, the momentum is theoretically with you at that point. And do you want to, you know, start a new song that no one in the audience is going to know, and therefore nobody's going to be able to sing along and have a hard time figuring out how to dance to it and all that stuff. So Everything's Right, for example, I'm not generally a fan of the tab material that makes it to the big leagues. You know, Sand, First Tube, couple of exceptions, obviously, but, you know, generally speaking, for over the years, I've not been the hugest fan of the of Trey band material that makes it to the makes it to the fifth stage. But you know, Everything's Right seemed to work really well for them, and seemed to work really well in the spot that they played it. That to me probably would have been a better choice for where to play Thread last night. But overall, I mean, I think the song's got some potential. I think think they kind of need to take it to the practice room and figure out what exactly they want to do with it. Is it going to be a jam vehicle? Is it going to be one of those songs that, you know, you just play it straight through and, you know, we play it in the first set and that's it? Or is it going to be something that they can stretch out? You know, we've seen them stretch out pretty much everything. I never thought I'd hear them play a 15-minute version of The Wedge. So,
yeah, it's Thread almost. It was kind of the same thing with Leaves the first night, where they started off the fourth quarter, as you said, like, by playing this new song that people were a little unsure of. And Thread's strange. It's got a weird time signature that I couldn't even figure it out, because it's very, very close to a 4-4, but it's like they removed a 16th note or something like that. I don't even know how you count that.
I'm not nearly as as sonically gifted or have as much theory, you know, training in theory or any of the as I know you do and any of those things. And I haven't played music myself in years, but even I was able to know the timing. The time signature was a little different than a traditional tune as I heard it last night. I also, you know, that seemed to be the one place where, in addition to having a tough time with some of the with some of the lyrics, that was sort of the one place where I thought, you know, Fish seemed a little bit unsure, as obviously the rhythm section along with Mike, you know, he seemed a little bit unsure of, like, you know, what time signature did they want to play the song in, and was it written in the time signature in which it was played? Has it been rehearsed that way? It was a little, you could clearly tell it was a debut, and it was like, okay, you know, did they practice it differently, or is it, you know, is this how it's intended to sound? So,
yeah. So the other thing that I was laughing about was I don't know if you saw any scared faces, but they have that part where they keep saying, you know, you're alone, you're alone. And I was laughing listening to it on the stream last night, thinking, you know, somebody in the wrong frame of mind right now might be freaking out a little bit at this strange new song where they're going, you're alone.
There was definitely more than their fair share of people who were certainly, you know, as the saying goes, wooking out over the over the course of the weekend. And certainly, you know, that was a place where, you know, I think to your point, more than a few people probably, you know, depending upon what was coursing through their veins and or through their brains at that particular point, might have been a good time. If you were going to look out, that was probably the time that it was going to happen.
Yeah. So they round up the show with Jin 2001 Cavern, Wilson Character Zero, relatively hot Jin, but probably nothing else of note in the show. Just kind of a nice wind down.
Yeah,
right?
You know, I mean, played at that point, it was going to be, you know, I think at that stage of the game, we were pretty much done with any major improv for the evening, and, you know, it's going to be for the last half hour, 40 minutes of a pretty standard rock show. I mean, you know, the songs were pretty well played. Cavern, you know, Trey didn't forget the lyrics to Cavern, which is always a good thing. You know, no auto, you know, through the composed section of Bathtub Gin without any major, you know, glaring flubs that I could hear, and I'm pretty critical and tend to notice them. Like, Stash was a complete train wreck last night and couldn't get the composed section right, which I have a really hard time understanding because they've played that song 300 plus times. But Cavern, Bathtub Gin, Wilson Character Zero, typical, you know, arena rock encore, no surprise. Again, it's important that they get the composed music. One of the things that in the years of seeing Fish, as I'm sure that, you know, has registered for you as well, is usually a very good sign in terms of the improvisation that will or won't come that evening is getting the composed music correct. So
right. So I guess, you know, if you look at the three nights, and particularly as a three night stand to start out the tour, what are your general thoughts on kind of where Fish is at?
I've really walked out, you know, really pleased with the overall sort of take on the entirety of the three nights. I mean, I thought they were, you know, especially for a tour opening run and given the quote unquote structure of how this tour is going to work, where there's so much of it taking place at one particular venue, which, you know, hopefully I'll get a chance to see you at. But it was, you know, for a tour opening run, I was, you know, I thought Friday night had highlights and was quite good. And the new material that was debuted on Friday night, I thought, you know, fit really well into the set list, where it was placed and how it was played. Saturday night, I mean, you had an all-time jam, so I don't know that anybody's going going to complain about that. And if you are complaining about Saturday Night Show, and you know, I am always leery of Saturday Night Shows because I've seen my as I know many of us have. I've seen my fair share of Saturday Night Specials where, you know, it's the Weekend Warrior crowd and we're going to play to that crowd, but they certainly didn't seem to, at least this past Saturday. So I thought, you know, Saturday was a really strong show. Sunday had, you know, certainly had really a really high highlight in the Carini that was played, and you know, maybe not a whole lot else that's going to be remembered or listened to again or anything to write home about. But you know, I walked out pleased with all, you know, with the Weekend in terms of the music that I heard, in terms of the, you know, in terms of how the venue staff ran they're much better prepared this year than they have been in years past, which was good. You know, they had plenty of vending, plenty of bathrooms, which had been a complaint in the past. There were not. I remember in 2013, the year of the monsoon, it was tough to find a place to go pee if you had to do that. So that was, it was definitely good to see them respond to the feedback that they had, that Live Nation had received in terms of making Northerly accessible, especially for the Phish audience. So, you know, I had a great, you know, this was by far, I've been to every Northerly run that Phish has done. This was hands down, in my opinion, the best that they've had. And, you know, I was pleased with the music. I was pleased with the venue. I was pleased with pretty much, you know, the new rig is cool. For those of you who haven't had a chance to see it yet, you'll get an opportunity, hopefully, if you're watching the free couch tour tomorrow night. But we were pretty each night we're about 15 feet from Kuroda, so it was clear that he was enjoying his latest toy and getting familiar with it, and you know, seemed to really like what it was doing for him, and seems like a much more natural fit for them than the LED panels ever did. I didn't hate the LEDs. I liked them a lot more in person than I did over webcast or something or anything. But you know, I think the current sort of iteration of the rig is among the coolest I've seen since they've come back in 2009. I do still miss the circles above the band, but I don't think those are coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the lights because I'm a big Chris Kuroda fan, and I thought that, you know, last year I tried to be patient with the LED walls because I usually find, particularly when he makes a major change to the lighting rig, that it takes him close to a year to really figure out how to take full advantage of it and some of the things that he wants. Because I think there's a combination of just what it looks like in the room. You come up with the new ideas and just the practicality of it taking so long to program all the lights.
It seems like, from what I've read too, that the setup of that rig was incredibly time-consuming and difficult, and there were and it had, whether you noticed them or not, like I read an interview with Chris that, you know, that the screens had given, you know, had given a lot of problems. Even just the writing the software for that he uses, if you see his whole setup is, you know, really state-of-the-art board, and he's got touch screens, and I guess writing software for to work with the LEDs last year was not easy, and there was a lot and it was buggy, he had said, and there were times where it just didn't do what he expected it or thought it was going to do when he, you know, gave it certain series of commands. It was just like, oh, I didn't expect it was going to do that, but you know, I mean, nobody else knows because he's quote unquote playing the lights. So yeah, he seemed pretty pleased with, you know, the way the rig can move around, the shapes that it can work in, that it can be constructed into. It's cool to see, actually. What was one of the things I liked the most is when he would kind of lower it down and it would give you, and it would be really just, you know, if you look at like where Phish is and how he's positioned on the riser, it was like literally he could probably stand up and bump his head on the lights. That's how close to the to the band when it descends the new rig is. And when you get a chance, when everybody gets a chance to see it live, you'll see it's really right there, and it really does, you get a chance to see it. There was very few moments where you felt like it was, and this was one of the things that was my sort of chief challenge with the LEDs. As much as cool as they were, as neat as they might have been, there were definitely times where I felt like it was dark on stage and you might have a hard time sort of seeing the band and seeing what they were doing, which sometimes is by design, don't get me wrong, but you know, this rig and this current setup, the way that Chris has it, it seems like, you know, it's really easy to see sort of what the band's doing. You can kind of, you know, see what Trey's hands are doing, and you know, watch his, you know, as his feet move across the pedals, and what's he figuring out, and you know, the communication with the, which is so essential to what they do. It seems like under this current setup, they're able to communicate a little bit better and kind of can see what's going on with one another, and you know, even on songs that were played pretty straightforward and almost entirely composed. Like, you know, you could see, you know, good interplay and good communication, which as silly as it might be, I feel like the lights have a lot to do with that and just their ability to see and communicate with one another. So,
yeah, it seems a lot more kind of fishy. And I know that his concern last year was that there's all these lighting directors that are sort of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say copying, but have learned from him and his style.
Right? He's sort of like the gold standard. I mean, you look at like guys who, you know, who sort of model their setup after what, you know, how many people want to hire Chris and model their setup after what he does and how many, and I know that's something that he's always cognizant of and conscious of. So, you know, I think, you know, to your point, you know, the LEDs was sort of his, I want to be on the cutting edge and, you know, let's see how this goes. We'll give it a shot this year. But I think he sort of went back to what's, what he's not so much that he doesn't know what he knows or doesn't know, but just, you know, what he feels fits the, I mean, I'm certain that, I mean, you know, contrary to what people who might think they have, like, you know, have Trey on speed dial. I certainly don't. I'm certain that, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, the band has told him, like, dude, do whatever the hell you want with the lights. We don't freaking care. Like, yeah. Just make sure they look cool. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure that, you know, at this stage of the game, he pretty much has unlimited freedom to, you know, set up his rig exactly how he wants it to. And, you know, they just, and he just tells, you know, Beth and Julia where to cut the check. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's, this seems like a little bit more of a, I think, of a close fit for them. So I'm excited to see it in
this,
person.
It seems much more like them. Whereas the LEDs, you know, I feel like you would walk into not that I haven't enjoyed myself at their shows either, but I would expect the LEDs if I walked in at like U2, whereas I would certainly expect them a lot less at a band like Phish.
Right. Right. Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to leave the listeners with some music from last night. What do you think we should go with?
Got to go with Carini, man.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how it's not to be missed. It was the hands down the highlight of last night. I think, you know, that there's any number of sections you can sort of carve out of the jam that will you know, give people an auditory treat as well as you know, I'm certain that if and when Phish releases an official video from that show, it will be of the Carini, and hopefully you'll be able to get a chance to people will get a chance to check that out and see the visual and see the lights and see how it all starts to work together. But, you know, that's it was definitely a Carini to remember. I've heard a lot of good ones. I think I'm probably looking at my stats. I've seen that song live like 17 or 18 times. So I've heard it a bunch. I don't ever tire of it. Especially since they've in this current era, Carini for me has been one of the songs that they've actually really probably done the best job with. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, so we'll leave here with the Carini jam today. Josh, thanks for joining. Appreciate you giving us some time to give us a rundown on the show.
All right, brother. Well, it's good to chat with you. Enjoy your Baker's shows if I don't get a chance to talk to you before then. And hopefully we'll catch one together again soon.
Absolutely. And so we will catch everybody later this week with some quick hits on Dayton and Pittsburgh before heading to New York. So thanks, everybody.